Dueling Reviews, a show where we biff, pam, pow our way all the way from number 5 to number 1. This is Top 5. Thank you for downloading and joining us again this time. Over there is Matthew Peterson.
Hello.
And right there is Mr. Rodrigo Lopez.
Hey, man.
And right here in my hand, all the way from the internet, I have an email.
Email does not make noise.
It does. Email coming from one of our fine listeners from many, many months ago. That's why it's on paper from many, many months ago. Says, hey, I would like to know, what are your top Batman comic stories? Top 5 comic Batman or Batman comic stories. We've got them right here, right now. Some of mine, I'm going to bet that most of mine are probably no-brainer ones. Oh, yeah, Steven, you talked about that one before. But one that I've talked about a lot, but I don't think a lot of people remember, is World's Finest number 271 from September of 1981. It was one of the first times that I've ever really focused on a Batman-Superman continuity story. I picked it up on vacation that summer, 11 years old, riding in the back of a camper as we were driving across this great country of ours. And I think we stopped in like Cheyenne, or maybe it was somewhere around Denver or something. Maybe it was up there in where we stop each year to get gas on the way to Nerdtacular.
Taco time?
No, but I picked this issue, and my parents bought it for me. And I was reading, and it's like about all these times that Batman and Superman met for the first time, recounting all of these great classic stories. And it's a 80-page giant, so you know you've got bonus Batman goodness right there. And then it's got this character named the Atoman or Ataman. And Batman and Superman are spending the entire issue trying to figure out, who is this guy? Is he this guy? No, he's not that guy. Remember that one time we met for the first time? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Remember that other time we met for the first time? And I'm reading this book going, what the hell is going on? And then it gets really weird at the end, because suddenly Superman flies up into the air, starts shaking, and then the Ataman loses all of his powers and goes crashing down to Earth, where there are two Batmans, two Robins, and two Supermans, because they vibrated from Earth 1 to Earth 2. And that was the first time I ever learned about the multiverse. It took me a long time to figure out what the heck was going on, and I had to read the issue multiple, multiple times. In fact, I still have that original copy.
What's going on with this comic?
What is going on with this comic? And of course, it was 4 more years later before I started seeing and reading Crisis on Infinite Earths. But wow, it was crazy times. And for the longest time, that was the only Batman related comic that I had. And I would just read it and reread it and reread it. And it goes down as my number 5 Batman comic story. The Batman of Two Worlds, or the Superman of Two Worlds, World's Finest number 271 from 1981. Probably not the greatest story in hindsight, but to me, it had one of these big lasting impacts, to the point that the very first time I went to a comic book convention, I made a point to try to pick up a better copy of that issue, just so I had something that was more pristine than the one that was all tattered and torn. So there you go. That's my number 5. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number 5?
My number 5 is Batman and Dracula, Red Rain.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, because it's like Batman gets bitten, and then like I think it makes the ears and his costume pointier that he becomes a vampire.
Yeah.
This definitely is my number 5. Like, I barely remember what actually happens in the story. I want to say either in that one, or there were like 2 sequels to it.
Yeah.
Like there's a Catwoman who is actually a Catwoman. It's pretty weird. It gets weird. But I like it because it's kind of what we were all thinking. It's like, well, you know, Batman is practically a vampire already. They should just make him a vampire. We were all thinking it, you guys. Everybody was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We were all with that. Definitely.
I remember totally thinking it.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's thinking it. Anyway, so yeah.
Man, does he suck
you know, it's like Elseworlds Batman. You know, it's like you can do anything to him. Turn him into a vampire, turn him into a Green Lantern, turn him into a
Superman.
A Superman.
Turn him into another Green Lantern.
A robot. A future robot.
Steampunky.
Turn him into a robot from the future.
Steampunky Lovecraftian Batman.
Another of the Nail, whatever you want.
Cowboy Batman.
Yeah. So yeah, Batman, Dracula, Red Rain, my number five.
Cool. Matthew, what do you have?
The year was 1989. Tim Burton had just taken the wacky Batman of the 1960s and turned him into something, well, I won't say better, but different on television, and thus Batman took over everything in the comics. And then DC said, hey, let's get this weird English guy. I think he's actually Scottish, but that's not the point. And they said, weird Scottish guy, write a story. What do you want to write?
I think I will write something about Batman.
Scottish guys probably talk more like this. And he said, my name's Grant Morrison, and I want to write about Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
And so he wrote Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth, which did two things for me. One, really terrified the crap out of me, even at 19 years of age when I finally got a hold of it. But it also took Batman's rogues gallery, and a lot of these guys were loons, you know. They weren't even interesting loons. Maxi Zeus. This may be the only place that Maxi Zeus is truly terrifying, or at least the first place. It takes bits and pieces of Batman lore about Arkham Asylum, about why the asylum exists, about the characters. It takes Two-Face. It takes Tweedledee and Tweedledum. It takes the Joker and makes them incredibly disturbing, archetypical, psychologically archetypical. We're talking like the Jungian archetypical with a capital archetype, and really makes it work and makes them feel like more than just a bunch of goons. And I think that it's probably, for me, one of the most successful rogues gallery Batman stories, because I think everybody is in it. Clayface is in it. There's the part with Two-Face is just utterly terrifying, because they've weaned Two-Face off of his coin by giving him a die. So now he has six options, and then they're going to give him a copy of the I Ching, so he'll have 23 options. And eventually, they're going to try and make him a fully rounded human being, but what they've done is crippled him and made him unable to make even a single decision, and he's more damaged than ever before. And, it's so creepy. You guys need to read it. Have you read it? I think we read it on the show.
We've actually done it for the Major Spoilers podcast. In fact, I don't think we've done Red Rain, but we definitely have done, I've done a review of World's Finest over at the Major Spoilers website. Yep. We talked about this Arkham Asylum book, and we could easily talk Red Rain in the future.
I think Arkham Asylum may have been one of me fighting for, if we're going to do Batman, can we do a Batman that I liked that was scary? Because seriously scary. And it really fits any continuity. It's an early example of Morrison saying that the story being told is more important than the continuity of something that's been put together. And I like that. I feel like done right, it works. And this is done right. My number five, Arkham Asylum, : A Serious House on Serious Earth. Do not read it in the dark.
My number four is also a book that we've reviewed before in the Major Spoilers podcast. It's where DC was sitting around and said, man, we really need to tell a good Batman story. Hey, let's get Frank Miller to come in and tell a Batman story. And so they got Frank Miller to come in with David Mazzucchelli, I think is how you say his last name.
Mazzucchelli.
And he sat down, Frank Miller sat down and cranked out a story about Batman who doesn't have a million gadgets, a Batman who is still learning his ways, and a Jim Gordon who is not yet Commissioner Gordon. It is Batman Year One, published in 1987. It was actually just part of the Batman storyline, issues 404 to 407, and it was fantastic as far as here's what could have happened in the first year of Batman. And we see Bruce Wayne getting his ass kicked, like one of the first times that he goes up against a bunch of thugs. We get to meet young street urchins who stab him in the leg, and it's become one of the, you know, people have said this is one of the best Batman stories that are out there. It was actually turned into an animated feature in 2011. I didn't think it was as good as the comic book, but definitely that arc, Batman Year One, is something worth checking out, and that's why it's at my number four. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number four?
My number four is where it is. That is, has a place on the list primarily because of the art. But also because I don't usually like Batman stories, so any story that takes Batman out of the usual elements is better for me. My number four is Batman, the doom that came to Gotham.
Mm-hmm. That is a good one.
I'm also not always a big fan of like introducing the Cthulhu type stuff into other stuff, but it really works this way. And by the end of it, that's another one where they're like, well, why don't they just do this to Batman? I think this makes sense. I think we were all thinking it, weren't we?
Yeah.
It's pretty chilly. Like it's like a weird thing. I think like characters that have names that we recognize are in it, but they're like in different places. I'm pretty sure at least one, if not all three Robins that are, or quote unquote Robins, like, you know, Dick Grayson,
right,
Jason Todd, Tim Drake. I forget how many are introduced, but I'm pretty sure they all die.
Oh yeah. In fact, I think one of them does as soon as they board the boat. When they find that it's been frozen by Mr. Freeze.
Like, they die off screen. Like, you don't even see them.
Yeah.
The fourth Robin, Joey Spicoli. Don't forget him.
Yeah. Hey. Danny Bonaducci, he dies too.
Oh.
But yeah. Yeah, Batman the Doom that came to Gotham is pretty weird and barely a Batman story at all, which is probably why I like it.
Cool. Matthew, your number four.
My number four actually is one that I had revisited recently out of sheer frustration. I don't know if you're familiar with this place on the internet. It's called the internet. I was futzing around on the internet, as I often do at work, and I came upon this thing that said, the 25 best Batman stories ever. I said, okay, I'm going to read this. And I read it, and these 25 stories, none of them were earlier than 1990. Only one of them was earlier than 1999.
Wow.
And I'm like, do you even Batman, bro? I mean, you can tell me that Hush is great. You can tell me that Court of Owls is amazing. But here's the thing. There are stories that exist before that. And I think that you really need to go experience them before you tell me that these are the greatest Batman stories ever. And so I went back to what I thought at the time was one of the greatest Batman stories ever. One of the not really earliest. One of the.
Is it the one called The Greatest Batman Story Ever Told?
No. One of the stories of Batman that I found, and I went, oh, I really like this. And I put it in my small box of Batman stories with other things that will show up later on the list. It's a single issue in 1956, which means that it's the equivalent of six issues now. Detective Comics 239, and it's called The First Batman. Sheldon Moldoff does the art. Bill Finger does the scripting. Classic 50s Batman guys. These are the guys who kept Batman basically alive in the late 40s, 1950s. And it tells the story of Batman finally cracking the case of his parents' murder by realizing that he remembers a particular costume that he finds in his parents' stuff, and it's a Batman costume.
Oh, I think I know this one.
Yeah, and he's like, what? This can't be. What? I adopted Batman years after I saw this. How could it be? And it retells Batman's origin. And it implies that Batman was basically influenced in his choice of costume by the fact that his father wore a bat costume to a fancy dress party before, when he was a young child, before he was murdered, obviously. And it's this story where he finds the costume and he puts it on. And the thing is really great because it's a panel to panel transition where they're like, hey, why not put on the costume that your father wore in order to bring in the criminal who killed him? Well, it turns out the criminal had complete memory loss until he saw the uniform, and then he ran into traffic and died. And at the end, Batman is like, I wanted to take him alive, but his own guilt convicted him. And it ends with the costume from the Wayne murder case worn by the first Batman. It's a really great story, and it's only 10 pages long, but it has so much stuff in it, and it has so much personality. It has so much classic, necessary Batman in it that it really deserves a place in your 25 best or your 100 best Batman stories, but you've probably never heard of it. So what was the issue again? Hipster. Detective Comics number 235 from September of 1956.
Mm-hmm.
Really good issue, really great story. And again, this cannot be underestimated. It does in 10 pages with economy of words and art what might take a Grant Morrison or, you know, even a Len Wein 2 or 3 issues to get through. It's really an achievement, and it's really a good story.
They have adapted that story a couple of times because there was a story, there was at least one issue in the 80s that touched on that exact same story again. But it was a costume ball and his dad had dressed up like that. And they've even adapted a portion of that story into Batman Brave and the Bold.
Yep. I believe Grant Morrison brought it back during his run because Dr. Hurt.
They did that then during
Dr. Hurt was wearing Thomas Wayne's old bat costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
My number three is, again, one that we've reviewed on the Major Spoilers podcast. You can go listen to it there. It's a 4-issue miniseries. Came out in 1988. It was one of the first books that was in the prestige format. And I remember, again, as a high school kid, seeing these books and having to pay, what, $4.95 or whatever the prestige books were at the time, $2.99 maybe at the time. I was like, man, this is expensive, but the art looks fantastic. And it's all about this crazy cult guy called Deacon Blackfire and his band of homeless people that kidnap Batman. And he's mind wiped. He's brainwashed into thinking their way. And he eventually escapes and he is trying to come to grips that he is not the end all be all that he thinks he is because he's been beaten down by Deacon Blackfire. It's not like he's been beat up. It's not like he's been outwitted. He was just slowly broken down over time. This was written by Jim Starlin, art by Bernie Wrightson, and it is the cult. It's a 4-issue series. You can get this collected now. Ran from August through November of 1988. I remember reading that as the issues were coming out and taking it to school and reading it in between classes and reading it during play practice and all sorts of different things. It is a very good book. And now that I'm looking at my list, all but one of these books that are on my list came out during the 80s. So
you're that guy.
I am that guy. And my number three is Batman the Cult from DC Comics, because who else would it be from? Rodrigo, who do you have for your number three?
My number three is an actual in-continuity Batman thing, which I'm sure has been written out of continuity by now, but who knows? You guys remember that time when like there was an earthquake in Gotham City and everything went crazy times?
And it almost made my
cataclysm?
Yeah, cataclysm. It's not that one. It's the one that came after No Man's Land.
The aftermath.
Yeah, which again, I'm like, well, why do I like this story? It's like, oh yeah, it takes Batman stuff and puts it in a different setting, right? This is basically gangs of Gotham City and like all the supervillains and heroes and people like basically trying to carve out Gotham City, you know, that is now cut off from the army and the rest of the United States or whatever. So it was interesting to me to see, like, you know, basically villains interacting with each other, like the police essentially acting as another gang, you know, trying to protect people, but also, you know, cut up territory and not having that sort of oversight that they would normally have. Not that it matters. I was going back and like reading through stuff and it's like, I forgot that like Gordon's wife gets shot in it, which is probably the part that sucks the most about it. I'm not crazy about that just because it's like, well, Batman doesn't have anybody they love. So let's just torture Gordon because that's what we do in comics. I mean, this is pretty much straight up 90s comics, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah. It was like 90s.
This is like 99.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, you know, a lot of interesting. It either introduces or kind of finally delivers Cassandra Cain into the continuity, who was a character that I really like. I liked her as Batgirl. I loved her costume as Batgirl, which I don't know if it appears in this or not. Because I was reading like some of the other stuff afterwards, so I don't remember exactly if we actually ever see the like sewn shut Batgirl costume.
Yeah.
But it's pretty strong. I liked it. And there's chunks from here and from Cataclysm that are really that are played up and that appear basically in the Nolan Batman movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's mm-hmm. stuff from here and Cataclysm in, you know, the Scarecrow's fear toxin
right.
problems. And right. also in basically that, what was the last one called? The Dark Knight.
The explodes. Dark Knight goes out for Quiznos.
Yeah. Where, you know, they shut down the bridges and everything. It's oh, you know, yeah. there's little echoes of this in the movie. So mm-hmm. if you want to see where some of that stuff come from, you can always check out Cataclysm and No Man's Land.
Yeah, it is a massive arc. It took 2 years.
Yeah, it's
to
a crossover because yeah. like it was like an, I don't know if there was actually like a Huntress book, but it was in it. It was like an Robin.
So. Every Bat Family book crossed over was yeah. just I think it was 18 issues of the main Cataclysm story and then like another 18 issues of No Man's Land, or maybe it went even longer.
I was going to say Batman had 3 titles and Robin and Catwoman and
Huntress or Birds of Prey were mm-hmm. there. And then there was the Nightwing title that also tied into it. So it took a long time to tell that story, and it's in a giant volume. I forget. I mean, sure. like I said, Cataclysm is 18 chapters. No Man's Land is
11 years long.
Is yeah, really, really
I
long.
Honestly, I probably haven't read the entirety of No Man's Land because I don't think I ever read any, like if there was a Huntress and a Nightwing one, I don't think I ever read them unless they came packaged together in some way when I was reading it, then maybe I did, but I'm sure there's chunks of it that I haven't read.
Well, so just so listeners know, No Man's Land is in 5 volumes. Just to tell the No Man's Land story. And I believe that Cataclysm is collected in 3 volumes, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. That's too many volumes.
Yeah. No, actually, it's released in 1 volume. In giant, it says it was collected into 1 trade paperback.
Wow.
So there you go. So, yeah, there you go. You got a lot of reading on your lap if you want to pick up Cataclysm and No Man's Land.
But that's right.
Your last
we ain't joking around here.
Cataclysm almost made it on my list because I didn't like the No Man's Land story, but I like how in Cataclysm they were trying to respond to the emergency because there is the initial earthquake and then there was the aftershock that came and how everybody's scrambling to try to rescue people and work together and keep the criminals at bay who are coming into the city to just rob and pillage. And I like that. Before the government said, you know what, Gotham City, we're going to cordon you off and lock you off to the rest of the world.
You guys could just die over there.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, that's a good one, though, Rodrigo. Where are we up to? We're number 2.
We're at my number 3.
Oh, you're number 3. There you go, Matthew.
Yes.
You're number 3.
My number 3 is what they call an Elseworlds, which is DC's way of saying this is a story that is definitely outside of continuity. Most of the Elseworlds have simple premise. What if Bruce Wayne got a Batman ring? What if Kal-El crashed in Russia? What if Batman was bitten by Dracula? This one is based on a simple premise. What if Oliver Cromwell, Lord Protector of the Commonwealth of England, didn't die in 1658, but instead died in 1668, allowing for another decade of English Commonwealth and control over the government, which led to a new sort of thing where the United States wasn't sort of a separate thing, and it was a Commonwealth nation, and England was still a theocracy, and all hell was breaking loose in a literal sense, as well as the figurative. And a young Bruce Wayne, who's about to go and join the clergy, is trying to figure out what happened with the murder of his parents 20 years earlier. And what he finds is that they were actually murdered by the government. This is weird, wild stuff. And this is why Elseworlds are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Batman, Holy Terror, one shot, one issue, written by Alan Brennert, who, by the way, is responsible for some of my favorite Batman stories. He's the one who did the story where Batman and Catwoman got married on Earth 2.
Yeah.
One of the best Batman stories ever. And Holy Terror, for a long time, was my favorite Batman story of all time.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. A really good book. A really good story. Has Dr. Ertl in it. Has Dr. Ertl's mysterious Green Man. And if mm-hmm. you know who Dr. Ertl is, you think you know who the Green Man is, but you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got Zatanna, and it's got a crazy Barry Allen, and it's got, you know, Charles McNider and Alan Scott and Carter Hall.
And then the final, you know, this final image of Bruce Wayne dressing up as Batman with a giant holy cross on his his costume.
Yes, cross bat.
Yeah, it's just very interesting. And I think that was not the first Elseworlds book, but it was one of the first
book to be called an Elseworlds.
Yes.
It was the first one to have the full-scale Elseworlds logo. There were before that, they had them. They were all over the place.
Imaginary stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then somebody pointed out that all the stories are imaginary, and it just got complicated. But Batman, Holy Terror, known for two important things. One, Batman is a young priest in a Commonwealth country. And two, his bat ears aren't bat ears anymore. They're shaped like a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important about Batman Holy Terror, not to be confused with Holy Terror Batman. Which is something entirely different and turned into a really bad comic.
My parents are dead.
First Elseworld title was Batman Gotham by Gaslight. Like you said, the first one to feature the logo was Batman Holy Terror in 91.
Yeah, the Holy Terror was 91, which is where they really sort of crystallized it and turned it into a thing.
Yep.
So now it's time for your number two.
We have also reviewed Holy Terror on the Major Spoilers podcast.
That one I know was me begging and pleading and can we please do a Batman story that I like?
You didn't have to beg and plead because that's one of – I really like that story too. It would have made my list just like Cataclysm would have made my list, except I had to get Court of Owls on my list somehow, and it came in at number two. It's very similar in – the nature of how do you break Batman like Batman the Cult was. But if you're looking for kind of a modern Batman story, it kicks off in Batman number one that was released in 2011, part of the New 52. And it tells the story of Bruce Wayne / Batman discovering that there is a secret society that's been running Gotham for years, probably was responsible in some part with his parents' death and murder. But the Court of Owls and their assassins known as the Talons come out and try to take Batman down. And there's a great crazy issue where Batman's underneath underneath the streets of Gotham, just losing his crap. And it's pretty crazy, man.
Oh my God, the streets of Gotham. What am I going to do? I'm Batman.
That one has also been turned into an animated movie. I don't think it's as good as the book and certainly doesn't have the Greg Capullo art, which is fantastic. But Batman Court of Owls, I want to say that ran
like 25 year, issues?
20, yeah, maybe 25 issues because it's a long story arc, but definitely worth the read. And it hits my number two just because when New 52 started, I think a lot of people were anxious and scared. And I was like, hey, New 52, it'll be a good place to kick off. And then I quickly realized that not all the books were great, but something about what Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo were doing with Batman. In fact, I dropped all the other Batman books that were coming out and focus my attention only on Batman, and it is fantastic. That's my number two, Court of Owls. Rodrigo, what do you have for number two?
My number two is a Justice League story, and it's kind of the biggest problem is that it's a good story and it's a strong story, but I think it's partially responsible for that notion solidifying that notion that, you know, if you give Batman a certain amount of time, he can take down anyone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which has become very problematic, but it's played well in the story because it goes wrong. What I'm talking about is JLA Tower of Babel, where suddenly someone is taking down all the members of the JLA. And it's like, Superman is like, oh, no, my skin. And Martian Manhunter is like, oh, no, my skin. Actually, there's a lot of skin-based taking down in the story. But as it turns out, the mysterious culprit who is doing it is doing it for their own reasons, but they're using Batman's super secret files that he keeps on his friends to do it. And it goes to show that, again, it's kind of like somebody who reads this and gets, oh, Batman is the awesomest, is probably not reading deep enough into it. It's like, actually, Batman has some problems. What you should get out of this is that Batman has some issues and they backfire and hurt his friends. It's like Batman's greatest superpower is not his like super brains or his super money. It's his super paranoia. And it's one of those things that can really be used against them in a very real way and used against the people that he cares about, like Green Lantern. So, yeah, JLA Tower of Babel is actually a pretty solid story. And it's kind of all about Batman, but you don't realize it at first until everybody's like, oh, Batman, I can't believe you did this. And
what?
Basically,
what did I do?
It's one of those things where, like, also that run, you know, you're like, man, what is up with Plastic Man? And it's really also one of those things where it's like, eventually you see where they go with it. And it's like, oh yeah, Plastic Man is for serious business, you guys. Like, maybe we should take, like, maybe we should pay more attention to Plastic Man and what he's doing.
Was this before or after they went back in time and Plastic Man, like, lived through all eternity and freaked out?
Before.
Okay.
Yeah, this was before.
Yeah.
Because that's basically the culmination of that, of like being like, yeah, you know, let's, if you're gonna rank like the superiest superheroes, maybe Plastic Man is actually in the top three after that story.
Oh yeah. Again, another book that we reviewed on the podcast. So go check it out.
Flash is dangerous, my friend.
He can be.
Yeah.
He can be. He's all over that Flash TV series. Matthew, what do you have for number two?
My number two. Well, you know, we've touched on the Batman of the 50s, and we've touched on the Batman of the 80s, and the Batman of the 90s. This, my number two, actually is a decade-spanning Batman story, which is actually my favorite recent Batman story. This is the thing about Batman. I don't necessarily like a lot of Batman, but when I find the ones I like, I really like them. So it starts in the year 1955. With a one-shot story in Detective Comics about the Batman of all nations. And there's the Gaucho from Argentina and the Legionary from Italy and the Knigget from Britain and the Ranger, or maybe the Ranger. I don't know. I say Ranger because he's from Australia and he uses boomerangs. He's a Ranger. And all of these characters basically are influenced by Batman to be Batman in other countries. And for decades, this was just an, oh, ha, ha, here's this one-off story. And then in the year 2009, you remember that Grant Morrison guy showed up. And he's like, well, I wonder what could have happened to the Batman of all nations, or as he calls them, the Club of Heroes. And so in the future, the Club of Heroes meets again for the first time in years, and then there's a murder mystery. One of them has been killed. And we find that the Legionary, who is this Italian man who loves life, is this enormous fat guy who just lives off his own fame. And, of course, the knight has died, and his son, the squire, is the new knight. And the Gaucho is apparently super badass. And Native American hero, Man of Bats, and his son show up, and they're super awesome. And the whole story unfolds and takes all of these characters. And really what it is the International Club of Heroes is a lot of stories about what might have happened to Bruce Wayne if he weren't so driven by being Bruce Wayne. And it's a great story. I believe it's Batman 667, 668, and 669 in the year 2009 or 2006 or something. But it's fascinating to read. And when the things start flying, you realize that all of these guys, even the washed-up Legionary, are still heroes. They're still impressive. They are still dangerous, dangerous individuals. And it really makes it makes that whole Batman thing feel somehow bigger and wider and more universal, and gives it more verisimilitude, and eventually leads into Batman Incorporated with national Batmans around the world.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, too, especially about that arc, is that it kicked off a huge Grant Morrison storyline run.
Right.
And the problem that I had with it was that when you read those, and it's kind of like with everything that Grant Morrison does, if you read them month to month, issue to issue, it doesn't make sense. And you quickly discover that it may not be your thing. But the thing you have to do, and this is what I discovered way after his run was over, is if you sit down and you just read it all from beginning to end without kind of breaking it up, it reads so much better and makes so much more sense that it really becomes incredibly good. And that was definitely a good run of Batman for people to check out.
He does
it's kind of mind trippy stuff. It does some mind trippy stuff, so you're going to have to bear with it.
The Ranga.
Yeah.
The Ranga. He's the Ranga.
Very cool.
He likes to go to Outback Steakhouse and order the shrimp.
All right, everybody. We have come to the top of our lists.
The top of the list.
And it should come as no surprise. My number one, Dark Knight Returns, Frank Miller. It is kind of the thing that redefined superheroes for better or for worse, but it was a book that I saw. It was after it was already released. I had seen it in the individual issues. I hadn't bought it because I was like, this kind of looks like a weird, scary Batman. I'm not sure I want to get into it. But then when it was collected in trade paperback, I bet you it was almost 7-8 months of that being in a trade paperback sitting in the B. Daltons and me looking at it going, oh, do I buy this? And look at this.
Back when there was one.
I know. And look, this one's got a different color cover. And oh, man, OK, I will finally break down and buy this. I think I had to spend a whole week's worth of lawn mowing money to buy this in the collected trade. And I sat down and read it and my mind was blown. Blown so much that I had to reread it again from the beginning like three more times within probably the first 3 weeks that I had that book. And it really kicked off my passion for comic books. And it's I think everybody knows The Dark Knight Returns at this point. And if you don't, well, we've reviewed it on the Major Spoilers podcast. Go look it up. But it's just basically a future Batman and him coming out of retirement and going all Frank Miller Batman crazy. But it is so good.
7 years into the show, we've all read the individual issues.
Yeah, I'm sure we have, right? So there you go. That is my number one top five Batman comics story. Rodrigo, illuminate us with your number one.
All right. My number one is actually pretty classic Batman. I've talked a lot about how I'm like, my preferred stories are when you take Batman out of his element and you kind of put him somewhere else and show some other facet of him. But my number one is what I feel to be kind of the essence of Batman. In it, he is not a superhero, really. I mean, he, you know, jumps around, punches people in the face like you'd hope. He's a detective, and he's kind of faced with this like kind of overwhelming challenge that just kind of gets bigger and bigger as it goes. And it's also kind of a year one story. I'm talking about The Long Halloween.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a lot that I like about The Long Halloween. I like the story structure. You know, it's like every time you cut back to see what's been happening, it's a different month. It's a different holiday that they center it around, except for August, because I think they couldn't find any. So it's like somebody's birthday. But
there's like nothing in August.
Yeah. So, but... You know, it's really strong. And, you know, it's like the art is good. I'm not crazy about the Joker in it, but literally everything else in it is like super cool. I don't know. I just like, I think that it is like just good, classic, like sanded down Batman. It's like, it's not Batman trying to be anyone else. It's not Batman trying to do anything else. It's not like, oh, I will protect this city with the blood that's coming out of my fingertip. You know, like it's not like that hyper intense Batman. That's not even from The Dark Knight Returns. That Batman has gotten amplified since then. You know, I think it's like standard Batman. If somebody comes to me and they say, like, what's the one Batman story that you'd recommend I read if I want to get into Batman, I'd hand them The Long Halloween.
Yep, definitely a good one. Matthew, what do you have for your number one?
If you said to me, what's the one Batman story that you would hand to someone to get them into Batman, I would say you hand them the stories that introduced me to Batman. I've talked a lot in the past about Pat's Book Nook, the used comic book store in Salina, Kansas, where you could go and buy all these comics and be like, oh, they're like comics and they're a quarter. Oh, my God. And you got weird things, you know, stuff that I bought in that store. Jack Kirby Sandman. I bought a big bunch of Steve Gerber Defenders and a bunch of original Ghost Rider. And I got some old detective comics and I just got a stack of them. And by the grace of whatever you want to call it, I got the greatest Batman run ever, because it starts with Detective Comics number 469. It's a battle between Batman and coughing. No, between Batman and Dr. Phosphorus, drawn by Walt Simonson. And then you get two issues of that, and then Walt Simonson is replaced. And you think, oh, well, Walt Simonson's gone. This can't be as good. But oh, no, 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 no. He's replaced by a young artist named Marshall Rogers. And Marshall Rogers is amazing. And the writer, Steve Englehart, had just left Marvel Comics and had done a bunch of work on Avengers, and done a lot of really, really important world building. And so he gives us this new old school Batman, where Batman faces foes like Hugo Strange. Hugo Strange appeared like once in 1940, disappeared, showed up again in 1977. And since then, because of this story, has been a player, not a major player, but a player. It gives us Deadshot, who had appeared once in the 50s, and all of a sudden in this issue shows up, or in this series rather, gets his silver mask and his red suit and his wrist magnums and becomes this amazing, threatening, dangerous figure. It shows us a Penguin who's actually entertaining, a Penguin who has a lot in common with the Penguin that we see on Gotham, and it gives us probably the most iconic Joker story of the modern era, The Laughing Fish.
Yep.
Where the Joker poisons all the fish in the water supply of Gotham City to have his face, claims he's copyrighted them, and he's going to kill anybody who tries to steal his copyright. It's a beautiful, lunatic Joker story. This man is off his bonds. He's nuts. He's El Bonzo Seco, and he's threatening, and he looks amazing. For 10 issues, Marshall Rogers and Steve Englehart did Batman and did some just incredible transformative Batman stories, all based on the old school Batman. They introduced the new Clayface, who melts people's faces and is scary. And a lot of the modern stuff that we've been talking about, your Dark Knights, your Arkham Asylums, your Holy Terrors wouldn't exist without this run. It's been collected as Batman Strange Apparitions. It's 10 or 12 issues. I know there's a reprint issue in there that doesn't get reprinted in the collections, which the collection, I don't know, the completest in my head goes, no, I need 477.
I think they republished that. They did that a couple of times. And I think the most recent version includes the entire run.
One of the issues in the middle of it was what they call the dreaded deadline doom, where it was a reprint of an old story because they didn't have the new story done on time. So it's not in the collection I have, but my collection is 15 years old. But if you can get your hands on Strange Apparitions, go do it. If you've never read a Batman story you like and you are leery of anything else we've said in this episode, I want you to go read Strange Apparitions and you'll understand what it is that makes people so attracted to Batman. It makes him
human, he's dreamy,
human and superhuman and dreamy. Yeah. It introduces Silver St. Cloud, the best of his girlfriends. And here's the thing about Silver St. Cloud's relationship with Bruce Wayne. Are you ready for this?
What's that?
They have the SEX. It's subtle. It's 1970s comics, but it's clearly there. And it is clearly a partially hormonal relationship between them, which is something else amazing that I had never seen in comics before when I was 12 and 13 years old.
If you're looking for other Batman stories to look for, we've run through our top fives. Look for things that have a Jim Aparo doing the art.
Yes.
Like when he throws a battery at a dude, knocks him the crap out in a junkyard and then smashes his face through a wall.
Yeah, or if you look for Denny O'Neill on the right.
Denny O'Neill is good, too. Yeah. Denny O'Neill and Jim Aparo together.
Yes. If you see anything written by Alan Grant and drawn by Norm Brayfogle, you know you're in for a treat.
I'm not a big Brayfogle Batman fan.
Brayfogle does good stuff. Have you read any of the Matt Wagner, Batman and the Monster Man, Batman and the Dark Doctor Darkness?
Who am I thinking of where suddenly Batman has, like, 42-foot tall ears?
That's Kelly Jones.
Oh, Kelly Jones. That's the one. Brayfogle, I'm good with.
In the 90s.
Yeah, Brayfogle, I'm good with. But man, when
Brayfogle does huge muscle bound Batman.
He also does Batman with an incredibly too long of a cape.
Yeah.
But Brayfogle, I take that back. Brayfogle, I do like his art and the stories. But it's Kelly Jones that drives me insane.
Yeah. Or if you want something really weird and offbeat, Thrill Killer, Batman Thrill Killer, written by Howard Chaykin with art by the dude from The Nocturnals, Dan Brereton.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story.
What else do you have on your almost ran list, Rodrigo?
There was a Venom that we read.
Venom's an interesting one, yeah.
Yes, that is. That is a
From Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yes, it is.
That's right.
There
that's
was right. A
Legend, tell us about that story.
There Steve, was a Legends of the basically Batman goes into the jungle and he finds this early source of Venom which would later power up Bane. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that this is a good supplement, a quote unquote good supplement, to build up his body so he can go and fight crime. And what happens is he becomes incredibly addicted to the stuff and just goes crazy, has to lock himself up until he weans himself off the Venom. I think it's like a 3 or 4 issue arc in Legends of the Dark Knight.
Four. Yeah. If you want something weird but still awesome, there's 2 issues. Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader? Neil Gaiman writing Batman from right before the Flashpoint retcon. Interesting stuff.
Also, don't forget, I think you mentioned it, but the mini-colored Batman.
The Rainbow Batman. Detective 247.
And here's the thing. That just, even though it may not be a fantastic story, it has been redone in Batman Brave and the Bold. They retold that story. And if you're a Pop Vinyl fan, they have released a Batman Pop in every single color of the rainbow based on that story. And my youngest son is slowly collecting them because
it's also fun to chant when you're at like sporting events. You can go Rainbow Batman.
Can you? I don't think anybody's ever done that. I watched the Super Bowl last year and I don't remember seeing anybody chanting that up in the crowds.
I was in a softball team in college and we were really bad and we didn't have a whole lot of skill.
Oh.
So we made up for it with clever chants. We'll Such kick as? Your butts at Scrabble. We'll kick your butts at Scrabble.
Okay.
It was the 90s, so we also chanted Not the Mama.
That's a good one.
All right, listeners, we have shared our top 5 Batman stories, and now it is your turn to share your top 5 Batman stories of all time. Head over to majorspoilers.com. There is a link. If you are on a mobile device like your iPhone or something, if you go into the show notes, you're going to see a link. You can tap on the phone number and it'll open up your phone and dial us directly to the Major Spoilers hotline. There's also a link that will take you directly to the podcast posting page for this show. And you can share in your comments section your top 5 Batman stories. I really want to read them because I'm interested in seeing what other people think is good Batman stories or not good Batman stories. But you can share them all over at majorspoilers.com. All right,
I will say one thing.
Go ahead.
If you want a treat, go online, Google Batman Grit and Gargoyles.
And also Google Batman Papa Spank.
No, don't Google
and
that.
And until next time, when you'll hear Rodrigo say,
Holy terror, Batman. That's the bad one.
Holy terror indeed. Take care, everyone.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.